So the reason the house is so hot is I've been trying to perfect my boule baking abilities and scoring technique.
What's boule?
Round French bread.
Oh, okay.
But when baking bread of this caliber, you need the oven to be a piping 450 degrees for a minimum of an hour before you put the bread in.
Why an hour? Isn't 450 450?
No, because it gets the box so hot that you have to heat the oven for so long. So the house is so insanely hot.
Oh.
Because not only did I make bread, I also cooked a lot of Indian food, which takes a long time to simmer.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hey Ted, it's episode 117. Today is Friday and so are you.
How did you know that? I'm wearing my Yadurf shirt.
Yeah, you had that on last week.
Did I?
You had that on Sunday. I shouldn't say last week.
I was wearing a Friday shirt on a Sunday.
You're probably like, I've been wearing this shirt all week.
I didn't wear it all week. I actually just showered and I put this on. I was like, I was supposed to wear this earlier. And then I go and I work out in the morning with the kids. You know, I run with Audrey and I bike with Bryce. And this morning it got away from us. And biking like ran straight into work and I had to like go straight to work. But hey, you know, if I'm working remotely, I don't have to smell good.
I guess so. We still don't have smell-o-vision.
Oh, thank God. I'm not gonna sign up for it when we have it.
I was trying to think of something like smell-o-zoom-vision or so. I don't even know, but
smell-o-zoom.
Are you busier now than when you're in the office, or is it about the same?
Initially, I think everyone was like, "Oh, let's just lighten up because we don't know how long it's going to last."
Sure.
And then after a month of that, they're like, "Oh no, we really need to like buckle down and do this." And now it's like 8 weeks, so it's like, "All right, this is the new normal," but it's not normal, so we're gonna have to like figure out how we're gonna change for the future. And like, so now I feel busier than ever, and I feel like all those things that we put on hold 2 months ago, it's like, how do we get them started again? How do we get the things?
They're coming home to roost.
Well, no, it's like, you know, like a hold off on doing that stuff because we don't know what the future holds.
Oh, I follow you. Yeah.
But now that like everything's in this new normal state and we know that there's change to come, it's more about like, how can we best shape the change that we want to best suit what we have going forward? So it's like, you know, we have a new department. I have a new group within our department and we're trying to label ourselves as futurists. And I know you and I talked about like...
So you are just like Walt.
Which Walt?
Right?
Oh, Walt Disney? Imagineers? Yeah.
He's a futurist.
We're like the Imagineers of post-ops production, you know what I mean?
There you go, yeah. So, enough shop talk. I saw you had a beer with a white label flash across my screen rapidly. What is that? Bourbon? Oh!
Have you had this one?
Oh my goodness, I'm so... No! Well, I've had that one before, but I'm so excited because of the beer I have.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I've had that one.
Okay, so since we're a audio...
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
Since we're audio, I will say that I have the Anderson Valley Boonville, California Bourbon Barrel Stout Malt Beverage Aged Wild Turkey Bourbon Barrels.
Oh, nice.
And I was really disappointed. This is 6.9 ABV. But, you know, I actually called down to Wine Liquor Depot and, you know, I had her go over the list of the beers.
Okay.
And she was going over the list of, she's like, which kind do you like? And I was like, well, IPAs, you know, and she started doing the IPAs and I was like, you know, whatever. And she's like, well, you have to log on the line. I was like, can I come by and look at them yet? You know what I mean? I don't know if we're in the second phase of coronavirus, you know, because I heard we're moving into the second phase. And she says, no, you still have to order online.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, well, I went over to my neighbor's house and we social distanced little almanac beer. You know, Frank had some almanac beers that we shared from a social distance. And I was like, do you have any of that? Because I'd take that. And she was like, oh, all the almanac's gone. I was like, all right, I'll call you back or I'll check it out. So then I went to Ralph's where you can actually peruse the beer aisle.
Sure.
And I found this one. So I was like, oh, this is good. This is a decent. And I was like, 6.9. I was like, I can't be both a beer snob and an ABV snob. I got to choose one, right? Like,
okay. So let's say you had like a 15% or, but it tasted like horse manure.
Right.
Like, does that make it a good beer? No, you want good flavor and good quality and a good mouthfeel. And you want, you know, right. I mean, and if right, it's six right, and right. a half, like, it's not like 6.5 is anything.
6.9. Come on. That's okay, almost 6. 7. 9.
Okay. Sorry. I misheard. So 6.9. Right. But I'm just saying though, like, that's fine. There's nothing wrong right. with that.
I mean, and you got bourbon barrels, so yeah. Okay, here, I'll crack it.
And that has like that Starburst cap.
Yeah, it says solar-powered brewery. That was really...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've had those before.
Yeah.
Very cool.
You're not your... this is not your father's Old Smyre beer.
Oh, thank God. Okay, so I have homebrew tonight.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm going homebrew. So I teased this last week because last week I had that Bottle Logic bourbon barrel stout that was 14.09%, if you recall.
Yes, I do.
And this week I have my own homebrewed bourbon barrel stout, which is very cool that you have one tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And mine is 7.5. The homebrew is 7.5. I mean, I don't have one of those crazy homebrews that I sometimes do. And 7.5 is modest. I mean, just like the 6.9 is modest. But this is always the tell for me is right before I open a homebrew, especially when I have them bottled, I'm always in like nervous mode because I go to crack it and then I don't hear that, you know, the whoosh. And then I'm just like, oh, it's flat. So let's see what happens there. Okay. Here goes some homebrew.
ASMR.
But yeah, it's just it's a bourbon barrel aged stout. Oh, yeah. I love that. I love that.
It's alive.
So I'm going to be sharing some with Clarissa, too, because it's one of those like 22-ounce bottles.
That's beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Look at that, too, man. Nice head on there. Homebrew's the best, though, sometimes. I'm sorry. I'm saving a couple for you and Frank, by the way.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, look at that.
I still remember, what was that Scotch ale that you had that was like 14%? It was amazing.
Oh, Scotch ale.
You said it went too far. You said it went over. It was like too much alcohol. But I was like, oh, no, this is perfect alcohol. It was wonderful.
Like, there's efficiency when it comes to, like, yeast and so on. So, in other words, the yeast, how efficient does it convert the sugars to alcohol, essentially, right?
Right.
One of the latest ones I did was at 86% efficiency. Unbelievable. I've never had one that high before. So it's a Belgian ale, you know? And then so this past Saturday, I brewed a porter, and we were talking about conspiracy theories last week, if you recall.
Yes, yes.
And one of the conspiracy theories was the New World Order that was going to be coming out of the coronavirus and everything based on Bill Gates and such.
Yes.
So I decided to name my porter the New World Porter.
Nice.
So I don't know. It's probably already taken for all I know.
But yeah, who cares?
New World Porter, but I thought that was good. So
you know what you do? You just put Jim's New World Porter on the front of that.
That's right.
That's an old trick from marketing, you know, when you have to get all of our titles cleared. If a title doesn't clear through legal, you just add Walt Disney's so-and-so such and
such.
That's
it. You know? Yeah. So what tasting notes do you have?
Tasting notes is like, you know how normally you say what we normally say, like if you can taste the liquor, it's too much.
Like it's not well balanced is what you're saying.
It's not well balanced.
Yeah.
No. That's true when you're talking about a 15% ABV, when you're talking about like, you know, the high ABVs. This one is like 6.9, but you get a little bit of the bourbon notes, the bourbon taste.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's okay because it's not Bernie bourbon. It's like, it's the actual flavors of bourbon. So
for sure.
It is, you know, it's like a little, it's like the nose feel of bourbon, but the taste of a nice stout.
Oh, nice. Yeah. What opening this and having one, the last one I had was about, well, it was last, what was it? Well, I guess it was Sunday because like I was trying to compare the two different.
Yeah. You did the comparison, yeah.
Exactly. And what I can say with certainty is the longer I go, the more they improve. And
because they're bottle aging right now.
They're bottle aging, exactly. I didn't keg these. And I can't wait to give you one of these and have you review it on the show because I think you're just going to totally love it. I mean, it's awesome. Like, oh, yeah, it's just, I mean, it's my own beer. I can't say it too much. I mean, it's, you know. I mean, confirmation bias.
But how do you do how do you do barrel aging when you do it yourself? Is it chips, wood chips, or something?
That's exactly right. So what they do is they take spent barrels and so on.
Yeah.
And they grind them up into wood chips. So you get all the smoke, you know, because what they do is, I don't know if you've ever seen a bourbon barrel being prepped, but they torch the inside of it.
Yes. Yes. I've seen that.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So a lot of it has that torch.
When I first saw that, I thought that has got to be one of the coolest. You work at a distillery and your job is to blowtorch the inside of barrels. I'm the distillery's blowtorcher. Like, that's my job.
So you get these wood chips that are, yeah, exactly what you said. You know, you just get, they grind them up and they're age soaked and everything. And the main thing about brewing is anything pre-boil, it's like up for grabs. It doesn't matter because you're going to boil it. So you're going to kill any bacterias and such, right?
Right.
Anything post-boil, you need to sanitize. So I use Star San, which is this commercial grade sanitizer. However, when you go to do your wood chips later on, so essentially what you're doing is after it's fermented, after it's all, you know, and it's just aging, that's when you add in the wood chips. The way you sanitize the wood chips is you soak them overnight in bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is I just use Jack Daniels. You know, it's not real expensive. It still has that bourbon flavor and so on. And what I do is I soak them in Jack Daniels overnight. And then in the morning, I drain off the Jack Daniels in like one of those like little cup strainer things, whatever.
Yeah.
And then I just dump them into the beer. So they kind of, it's like you have the fired oak bourbon chips, but they're also saturated from the Jack Daniels from being overnight. You know what I mean? Mm. So you kind of do get a double whammy, but I think that really enhances the flavor and really makes it, it's not like so bourbony that like you feel like you're drinking bourbon, but man, right. It's so good. I can't wait for you to have it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So how was your week, man? I hear you're still selling on Facebook groups and all this. You're selling like kids' fake computers and such.
Yeah, I'm, you know, at all hours of the day and night, it's like, it's taken over a lot of our lives. And I'm like, I tell Anne and the kids, I during the week I'm working and I'm like, I'm working, I can't do this, you know? So they help out during the day and they're like answering people that are trying to buy stuff. And it's funny because like when you have like a garage sale, you put all your stuff out all at once, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a huge like front end kind of impetus to like get organized. And then once you're organized, you have to then have everything organized. And then you have the yard sale. And then at the end of that weekend or two weekends, you have like a fire sale where you're like, exactly, just trying to get rid of the stuff, yeah, right? Well, I mean, this is just like streaming services where, you know, there's no finite amount of time. It's like this crap was in my garage and it can stay in my garage. I just have to organize the stuff that I put in the marketplace and up for people to see. So I had to like organize the back garage, which is much easier. And I made a couple of shelves that are dedicated to this stuff. And as I sell stuff off of those couple of shelves, like I replenish it. shit, you know what I mean, with new stuff. And you know, it's just like this cycle of, you know, of stuff. And we're trying to possibly look to move. We don't know how it's going to happen or what's going to happen. But, you know, if we do move, I don't want to be moving this crap, you know,
yeah,
this
exactly,
stuff that we've put in these garage over the past 15 years, you know, 16 years here.
Ted, I know exactly what you're talking about, though, because I mentioned last week, I think it was, that I donated a bike to the Santa Barbara Bike Coalition.
Oh, yeah. The cargo bike.
The cargo bike. So the bike's in the garage. I'm trying to donate this thing. I don't know what to do with it. Like,
But wait, Jimmy. I have to cut you off because you, if you were going to sell something, like, you have nothing to sell. You're like the leanest, like, living.
I'm kind of minimalist.
You're on the minimalist side.
No, we've had garage sales and stuff, but that helped me get rid of all my junk.
There you go. But when you got rid of that and I went over to Frank's to have that beer with him, I was like, yeah, Jimmy just got rid of that cargo bike. And I was like, and I love going down to Home Depot and Ralph's with Bryce in the morning now. I said, maybe I should go find out where that cargo bike is and buy it.
Oh, it's way too small for you. So the bike was probably in the garage for, I don't know, 6 months or something. And I'm like, do I sell it? I tried to sell it on Craigslist. I couldn't do anything. So I put, you know, I get in touch with the guy, this guy Ken with SB Bike. And I tell him, you know, like, hey, here's the bike I want to donate, and on and on and on. And he's going to come pick it up the following day. This is a few weeks ago.
Right.
So he emails me. Oh, I got a hernia. I can't come. No. I'm in the hospital, whatever. Sorry for any inconvenience. I said, Ken, this thing's been in my way for 6 months. One more week is not going to be a problem.
Right.
So going back to what you're saying, it's like, what are you going to do? You know, it's like you just stick it back in the garage. It's like, right, it's already exactly been in my way for 15 years. Like, what's one more day, right?
Right, right, right.
So, yeah. So other than that, I mean, in selling stuff and Facebook selling stuff, what else you been up to?
So work is great. Work is, like we said, it's ramping up. We're trying to get into this new normal. I'm trying to, like, move forward on a bunch of different ways of doing things, you know, and just trying to get people to think differently about, you know, the way that
tech-wise and all that stuff.
Yeah, just the way you move files around. These files are massive, you know. Some of them are 4K. So it's just like, 4K files. Wow. From people's homes. It's like, I was thinking about setting up like a
upload time, 3 weeks.
Yeah. I was thinking about setting up like a satellite station where it's like, all I did was upload things for people. Like, I was thinking, this has got to be a cottage industry now. Like, if you send me a drive, I'll wipe it down with like bleach on the outside and I will upload your file. And, you know, it'll take a little time, but we'll make sure that it gets up to a place where in the cloud where we could share it safely and securely. So
for sure.
I don't know. There's no service like that right now, but we do have people working not round the clock, so you can kind of like get it in there when you need to. And I've been doing like large files from home, and like you said, do it overnight and you can get like a 10 gig file up there, but the 4K stuff you have to like send it into the office, so it's interesting.
Yeah, it's just, it's too big.
But it really, you really take for granted the upload speeds that we have in our offices, because it's like 100 up or whatever it is, you know.
Oh, that's how the school district is too.
Exactly.
I mean, if I upload like something, it's done like lickety split, you know?
10 gig Ethernet. It's like, you know. Oh,
and that's the slow, and that's on a slow day.
So how about you? What have you been doing this week?
Yeah, so week is good. I finally had my Home Depot trip today.
Okay.
Rode down, walked right in, no big deal. And it's kind of jarring though, right? Everybody has a mask on.
Yes.
But that guy.
Oh, yes.
You know who that guy was?
You.
No, my dentist. Oh.
And he has a mask on normally when you see him, right?
I walk in and there's my dentist and his wife, the only two people in Home Depot with no mask on. I'm like, what are you doing? You know? But anyway, so I get all of my little project stuff and I do this garage outlet thing. Make a long story longer. I turn a three-way switch into a two-way with an outlet.
Okay.
So what I did was, you know, essentially I wanted to have this outlet on this wall instead of a switch that we never used.
Right.
I figured out how to like turn the white into the common and do all this stuff. Anyway, just to get to the point, I can't get the lights to work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hour and a half later, I'm banging my head against the wall. I thought, let me just change the switch, because I chased down like which wires were going where and the whole thing, right? With meters and all this stuff. Let me just change the switch. Change the switch. Bam, worked. I was like, projects just know how to F with you.
Yes, yes, 100%. Yeah.
You know, like a bad switch. That's what it was. Oh, it drove me crazy. But the story of the week. So I started this lane striping retrofit project for the neighborhood.
Okay. Because, all right. Oh, I think Frank told me that you were excited about this. Yes.
Oh yeah, man. I'm on the Santa Barbara Bike Coalition Advocacy Committee or whatever. So I figure, what better place to start than my own neighborhood?
Yeah.
Right? So I write up this proposal. I have this whole like cover letter. I have visuals. I mean, references, cost projections. I mean, I go all out.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, you know, I get in touch with like all these government agencies and stuff. And I thought, you know what? I should gauge the temperature of the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So I create this email, walkmesaoaks@gmail.com. And Mesa Oaks is the name of my neighborhood.
Right.
And email me, go ahead. I don't care. I'm going to cancel it.
Why'd you do walk instead of bike?
Why? Because I feel like we need walking infrastructure. Bike. The real reason is we don't have sidewalks.
Okay. I got you.
And a ton of people are out walking.
They walk in the streets.
A ton of people are out biking too. But the car track, like, we have 20-foot lanes, right? The roadway is 40 feet wide, and there's two 20-foot lanes. The 101...
That's wide.
The 101 has 12-foot lanes.
Oh, my God.
Right? It's like a drag strip out there. So it totally fails the tricycle test. You know, in other words, I don't trust my kid on his tricycle in the street, you know?
Right, right, right.
Totally fails. So... my proposal was two 10-foot lanes, a 7-foot parking lane, and two unidirectional 5-foot walking lanes with a 3-foot buffer on one of the sides. That makes up 40 feet. Anyway, so I put it out. I open a Nextdoor app with this email address.
Yeah.
Never been on Nextdoor before.
You can sell stuff on Nextdoor too. By the way,
you can. The one thing about Nextdoor, though, you know, like I said, I put it up there to gauge the temperature, but boy, is that a graduate study in interpersonal conflict. Holy cow, man. People are like ruthless on there. Like you start cruising through and you're like, oh, they're friendly. They're sharing stuff. You put up anything like change the traffic flow. I mean, they come at you with pitchforks and torches.
What were they saying?
Oh, I mean, some people, like, it's just like, so what you're telling me is the idiots who drive through the neighborhood need lines to guide them. Is that it? You know, it's just stuff like that, you know? And you're just like, well, not really, but, you know, and you try and, like, have this, like, dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, this... you know, and I'm like, well, it gives the visual signal that you can go fast. And if we narrow lanes, it like changes the...
Yeah, it slows some people down.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I'm just trying to do that stuff. But
I will tell you, as somebody who now bikes on a daily for exercise with my son, who's like 10 going on 11, but he's like a hot shot.
You see it. You see it.
He's a hot shot on the bicycle, right?
That's because he's 10.
And I'm like, we're not getting anywhere close to Satakoi. We're not getting anywhere close to, you know, White Oak.
And he's jumping ramps.
Right, I know. But we go down White Oak and there's a little bike lane. But even with the bike lane, sometimes he's like, you know, going from one side of the bike lane to the other side of the bike lane. And I'm behind him and I'm like, oh my God, what are you doing?
Like, he sees like a curb. He wants to jump it, you know.
But I wish, you know, and that's what I was telling you. I said, I wish the bike lane was between the parking lane and
exactly.
the sidewalk.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't make sense to put the bike lane between the parking lane and the traffic. You know what I mean? The traffic they've got to be scared because we're like wobbling on our bikes as well. You know, I got him a new bike this past week.
Oh, cool.
Because he was like, he was too big for his bike.
What'd you get?
We just got a used bike.
That's the best kind.
Yeah, the Huffy. And he's like, ooh, this one has like the horns that he can hold different ways. You know? So he was super excited about the horns and stuff. And because he was riding his sister's bike for the past month, which he was too tall for, the bike was too tall for him. Every time he got off, he had to like get both of his legs on one side and then jump off, you know?
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I'm like, now you have you have the right size bike. So you just put your legs down, you get off the seat and you're down. You know what I mean? You don't have to get both your legs on one side and run alongside and then stop. You know what I mean?
Well, and not only is it in the traffic lane, though, but it's also in the door zone. So exactly. If someone flies a door open, it's either like crash into them and take off their arm or go into traffic, right? But let's just say now that Bryce is becoming a biker, let's talk about the trailer becoming.
Ah, so nice of you to segue into that.
There you go.
So this is actually melding in because now Netflix is so fast and furious with their trailer releases and the stuff. And I know this has been out for a little bit, but we actually watched Becoming this week, the day that it came out. It came out on Tuesday. I saw the trailer on Monday, so I knew it was coming out and we knew all that stuff, but it was just like this rapid succession of events. And I don't know, it really took me aback. And it was, you know, a time politically back in the day where I was, you know, a little more nostalgic for, let's say, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree with you, yeah.
It's an uplifting, hopeful story.
I bet it was great for Audrey.
And that was the thing too, like as men and as fathers and things like that, and as a father of a daughter, I'm like, oh, this is gonna be great for Audrey, it's gonna be great for Anne. But I just felt like there's a couple of people in the documentary, like we don't get to it in the trailer, but in the actual documentary, that it's uplifting for everyone. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be for Audrey. It could be for Bryce. It could be for me.
Yeah, I got
it could
you.
Be for you.
Rags to riches.
That's the idea of hope. You know what I mean? The idea
for
of hope is a thing that we strive for in every aspect of all the things that we do. You know, when I talk about changing stuff at work, it's about hope for making things better. You know what I mean? It's never... You know, and I think the politics always gets in the way of like, oh, you're trying to automate everything, which means you're trying to take away my job. I'm like, no, I'm trying to make your job easier so you can do more of the things that you like to do rather than pushing that same button every day.
So you can self-actualize.
Right, yeah. I'm like, do you enjoy just pushing that, knowing that you, when that button lights up.
Put the widget in the hole.
Yeah.
Put the widget in the hole.
When that button lights up, you got to push it.
Right.
I was like, well.
A Skinner box.
Wouldn't it be better if something actually just took care of that? Because that seems like a dumb thing for a person to be doing, you know?
Exactly.
But I guess there's some people that really like that idea. And of course, I'm oversimplifying. But, you know, now as the computers get more complex, as AI gets more complex, there's less and less of that we need to do. And why not graduate to a higher level functioning, you know? So that's more about work. This is about hope. And Becoming is about becoming a better you.
Well, again, like I said, self-actualizing.
Yeah. 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 Well, can you explain that? Because I guess I'm yesing that a little bit.
Self-actualizing?
Yeah. I was like, oh yeah, self-actualizing. Like I can conceptually, like contextually understand what that means. But now I'm thinking like, maybe I don't fully understand the technical term of self-actualizing.
Yeah. Essentially, if you think about a pyramid, the pyramid would be looking at like your needs, right?
Maslow,
exactly. So like your hierarchy of needs. And, you know, if it's like your safety needs, your loving and belonging needs and everything, the need above it can't happen unless the need below it has been fulfilled. So here comes my psychology, you know, background.
Yes.
So self-actualization says, I don't long for food. I'm not food insecure. I have my loving needs. I feel
secure, safe.
Like I belong to my tribe.
Yeah.
I'm safe, you know, like whatever it is, right? All of my needs are met. Now, self-actualization is I can become who and what I was meant to do. Let's just say, for example, bike advocacy, like everything has been fulfilled in my life. I can now advocate for safer streets.
Right.
You, everything has been fulfilled in your life. You can now create the app to solve the problem of streaming, you know, or whatever right. it is, right? Exactly, like you can exactly. do the thing. If you're worried about where your next meal comes from, the last thing you care about is streaming or trying to solve a streaming problem, you know? So that's really what self-actualization is you are doing, you are able to achieve that thing that you were like born to do, you know? So I don't know, like Jane Goodall, for example, yes. or something like that, right? Like she self-actualized because she was able to work with primates and apes and all this stuff. And she didn't have to worry about like her next meal or anything, you know, and you know, whatever it is that, and that's really what that means. But one thing I want to say, well, no, two things I want to say is I think there's two Netflix fails.
Okay, tell me.
The first Netflix fail is I think they need to increase their bandwidth because I spent the day one morning trying to get, trying to get Bill Burr to play. And it kept saying, we can't load that title for you right now.
Oh, wow.
And it couldn't load it. And then finally, after like a dozen tries or something, it finally loaded it. But let me say, though, I watched Bill Burr Paper Tiger.
Oh, yeah? Is it good?
Well, the dude is so crass. And he is like, the way he addresses like the Me Too movement and all this stuff, because he is so crass.
Uh-huh.
So the thing finishes, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, like outrageously crass. I'm not saying like, ooh, that was a little bit touchy. No, I mean like vulgar. So Bill Burr ends, what do they feed me? But the Becoming trailer. They couldn't be further from each other. The audience for Bill Burr could not be the audience for Becoming. I don't know what their algorithm is feeding me.
I think maybe they know that Bill Burr's wife is African American. So maybe that's the whole pivot there.
Okay, and maybe they know Bill Burr is like doing it for ratings. So they're like, there's no way this guy's serious. We'll give him Michelle Obama.
Or maybe they're just trying to temper it instead of like, because the algorithm in YouTube, it's just down the rabbit hole. So it's like if you...
Oh, yeah. YouTube's the worst.
YouTube will like just pull you down this rabbit hole of like you end up in this 4chan videos and stuff on YouTube. 4chan,
right.
And you're like, but I was just watching Sesame Street and then now I'm watching like, you know, the people in Charlotte with the torches and stuff. But no, maybe they have like this reverse algorithm where they're like, ooh, that ended kind of sour. Let's flip him into something that we can uplift him with, you know? And it's longer term stuff. So maybe it's longer viewing.
So maybe it's not a fail then. Maybe it's like...
The bandwidth is a fail. The bandwidth is a fail.
The bandwidth was a fail. Yeah, that was, I was pretty angry about that one. But yeah, you're right though. Maybe it's that like, okay, you just watched this really like negative portrayal of women. Let's show you a positive portrayal of women. So, okay, sure. I'll give you that.
That's a compassionate algorithm. I mean, I appreciate that algorithm if that's what it's doing.
Right, know? Right, right.
And I mean, when we're complaining about bandwidth, that's serious first world problems.
Right. I mean? And can I say though, the presidency is not kind.
Yes.
I mean, does Barack look like Red Fox or what?
You think so? He definitely aged. He aged a lot in 8 years, and they all do.
Oh, no, they all do. You're right about that. He went in, what was he, 42, 46?
Yeah, yeah.
He was, you know, something like that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that guy, 8 years, he comes out, he's 78. Wow, did that guy age.
And Michelle looks the same. Like she looks
better. Amazing. What are you talking about? Yeah. I mean, that dude, like, I mean, maybe it's just gray hair and wrinkles. I don't know. But like, wow, it's like incredible.
Yeah. So the only thing I have to say about this trailer is that I think the trailer was very interesting because it really just found a moment within the documentary where they could lift a segment out because, you know, they do cut around a little bit. But I felt like the trailer has multiple segments from the same 5 or 10 minutes within the documentary. Because like when you see that scene from the trailer, when you watch a trailer and you're ready and then you're like, ooh, I'm going to watch that documentary. And then when you watch the documentary, you're like looking out for the scenes that you've seen in the trailer.
Yeah, yeah.
And normally you're like, oh, they took something from here, you know, at the beginning because it intros it, you know, they took something from here in the middle because, you know, that's telling you the story. And then they took something here from the end because we want to have the same kind of...
It rounds it out or whatever.
Yeah. You want to have the same kind of thing. Well, I was waiting for it and wasn't thinking too much consciously about it. But when that first kind of part of the trailer comes up, I'm like, oh, okay. So it's right here is where this, I remember that from the trailer. And then like a few scenes later, oh, I remember that from the trailer. And then a few scenes later, I'm like, oh man, this is almost like a lift. You know, the term lift, when they just take a section and they're just like, all right, we're just going to cut out like 2 minutes and we're going to start it. And then we're going to let the whole thing play out and then we're going to end it. And we're just going to lift that part of the documentary or the episode out. And we'll just share that because it's so encapsulates what we want to talk about. So it was interesting to me that they didn't stray too far from the narrative within the documentary. Like they used 2 minute piece for the trailer that's all within like 10 minutes of this, of the stuff in the actual documentary.
Okay, you already saw it.
Yes.
How would you say that the trailer fills the need to watch the show and everything? Because I do look forward to watching it. It looks great.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it's Michelle Obama's documentary. And yet there are these stories of these families, of these individuals throughout. So the first time they did it, they followed one of the people that Michelle is talking about. And I look at each other and Anne's like, oh, we're going to follow this young person right now. Like, it kind of took us aback that Michelle Obama's like sending a camera crew off with one of her interview subjects that she was in a, you know, in this round table with, you know, and then they followed her for a couple of days, you know, and it's like, it's really empowering to kind of give a platform to the people that you're talking to. And just the way that she interacts with people is just a testament to the way that you should talk to every single person that you meet. You know what I mean? It's like, right, when you're talking to the person that you're talking to, when you're at a cocktail party, like, don't look around to other people when you're in a conversation with a person, you know what I mean? And
everybody's important in their own way.
Right. And I think you've said it before, everybody has a story and like you can be engaged. And I've totally been in conversations where we're having a good conversation, but then all of a sudden they're off in another space and I'm just like, all right, fine, bye. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
You know,
exactly.
So it was great to hear her say that and to see her in like a signature, like a book signing line and how she like lets the people that are walking up to her have that moment and like engages with them and lets them know that they're human beings and they're important.
Exactly.
Even though it's like, they're just passing through. I mean, Stephen Colbert is great. I loved him. I went to get a book signed from him.
Oh, nice.
And he did the same thing, but it was very clear, like he was very regimented. Like when the next person was walking up, he was on to the next person. I was like, all right, fine. I had my, you know, few seconds with you, you know what I mean? But it was like, it's kind of amazing that she gave these people all the space and the people are losing it.
She has a lot of empathy for others.
Tons of empathy. And it was like, so it was like a Herculean amount of empathy that she has for people.
Oh, very cool. So, okay, you saw it. I definitely look forward to seeing it.
Yes.
I'll give my show notes probably at the time I watch it. I'm not saying it's going to be this week, but I definitely plan to watch it. So moving on to Space Force. So I like this for a number of reasons. One is, I mean, Steve Carell is funny. And
yes.
Space Force, I remember when the guy who occupies the White House said, you know, the Orange Man, when he said that he's going to start Space Force, it was almost comedic.
Uh-huh.
And of course, they make a comedy. And I think we, me and you, talked about this when Netflix started to conceptualize it or something. Did we? It sounds very familiar.
Yes, we did. We talked about it.
We did. Okay, good.
We talked about it. And that's why I was so happy to see this teaser trailer. I mean, like, to call this a teaser trailer and have it be over 2 minutes long.
Right.
And it be coming out so soon. It's like, this is like, stop classifying your stuff as teaser trailer. This is a full on trailer one. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's a full trailer. So the a few more reasons why this really like touches me is, you know, I live literally like a couple miles from Vandenberg Air Force Base.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We watch launches all the time. Uh-huh. My neighbors build rockets for a living. And Vandenberg Air Force Base is the headquarters, the national headquarters. I guess it's headquarters. I don't know what you call it, but it's like the main facility or whatever, uh-huh, of our new Space Force.
Is it really?
It is, yeah. So okay, like the Space Force is like literally like right down the street from me. And the one scene where they show the rocket about to take off and it's a Delta Heavy in the background and you see the hills and everything.
Yeah, that's you. That's
that exact launch was about a year and a half ago, right around the holidays. Mm-hmm. So not this past Christmas, but two Christmases ago. And it got delayed. Oh, I forget exactly what it was. It got delayed like 6 to 8 weeks.
Was that the one you were supposed to shoot? You were doing your night shoot?
Exactly. That's the one I was going to go take the photography of and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And my next door neighbor, Mark, he worked on that project and everything on that launch. And I forgot you knew about that.
It's on the show.
That's true. I don't even remember what episode. But about a year and a half ago. But anyway, so Mark told me that there was this film crew out there and they had everything set up and they had all kinds of like cameras and,
yeah,
you know, in his mind, they thought it was a documentary on their launch.
Right, right.
Sure enough, it's this movie. So I can't wait to watch this for no other reason than it was going to be, you know, I was supposed to be there to do all the, not do, do the photography, but right, for my own personal photography.
Right, right. You were granted access for your photography.
Yeah. I was granted access, but because of all these delays and stuff, I just said, hell with it. I never went there.
Uh-huh.
So it was this movie that I would have been along the side with. Oh, my God. I totally wish it would have gone down. And, it upsets me, but that's okay. So, yeah, Space Force, Vandenberg Air Force Base, the whole photography thing, the fact that I'm so connected to this community and everything.
Yes. Yes, yes.
I can't not watch this one. This is going to be so amazing.
What do you think about the Beach Boys?
I didn't know the Beach Boys were therapeutic. I didn't know you could do yoga, although he's not doing yoga, but I didn't know the Beach Boys were meditative.
Yes.
Let's put it that way. Meditative. Yeah.
It could be a TikTok dance, you know, what he's doing in that room. Oh, yeah.
Like I said, I finally found TikTok after, I don't know, like it's not new to anybody but me. And it was old in 5 minutes, you know? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, trailer-wise and everything, I think it's just, it checks the boxes. I don't think it's anything spectacular.
I bring up the Beach Boys because I think, given any other format other than YouTube and Netflix, you know, like we're Netflix, we're a streaming service. We're going to put this on our streaming service and we're going to put this on YouTube. But we're not going to like, you know, worry about the fact that this is a teaser trailer and it's going to be over 2 minutes long. We're going to let this scene play out where Steve Carell needs a little space, you know, and he needs to like calm himself down. And we're going to let the whole song play out and we're just going to sit in it and enjoy, you know? So I think to me, that's the thing that it allows it to kind of be another lift. You know, this is my new thing where, you know, this idea, like any other thing, like the minute that it broke into song, you're out of there, cut out of there. For them to just continue and to let him play it out and to do the whole dance and to do it in front of the windows and to get to the exaltation at the end where he's just like, where he's calmed himself down, is a space where normal trailers, where you're waiting to watch a movie, wouldn't go. So I appreciate that. I love it. End of May, end of this month, we'll get to see it. And you'll see the poster for this, because I think the poster is genius. It just has Steve Carell in a space camouflage in a space shirt
suit. Yeah.
In front of the moon.
Oh, that one. Yeah.
So it's like a floating head. So, you know, it just shows the lunacy of what's going on here, you know? So, and another thing is that my favorite line is where one of his underlings is passing him in the hallway, talking to somebody how he's like messing up, you know? And then he sees his boss and he's like, I'm talking about somebody else right now. You know, I'm doing like the dog walker or whatever it was, the ridiculousness. And like Steve Carell knows that he's talking about him, you know? So that was one of the things that really hit me very directly.
Well, and what I was thinking too is, you know, you mentioned last week when talking about Extraction, and I forget what it was, like a 12-minute master shot or something.
Yes, yes.
And I was watching this, and all I thought was, the Beach Boys scene is, I'm like, this is like a 2-minute master shot. You know, like, it just goes, you know, just go with it, man. Don't stop, you know. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait.
Right.
It's like, and again, another one of those streaming Netflix, you know, I don't care if it's Amazon, whatever, but I think right now, I don't know, we're in this, what, 7-8 weeks, something of coronation. yeah. And I said it, that's right. no, but so we're in like 7-8 weeks or whatever, uh-huh, of, you know, COVIDcation. And I think the main thing about it is, like, there's a lot of streaming services, and I think Netflix and HBO is doing their thing, and, you know, everybody's kind of offering what they're offering.
Right.
But man, Netflix is just crushing it, I think. I think they're just taking their backlog and they're just releasing all this stuff. And I couldn't help but think they're like, you know, pardon the pun, but they're blowing their load. And if this whole thing goes another few more months or something, I think they're going to run out of content. I don't know, you know? What do you think?
I mean, do you know, so there's a series in Australia called Neighbours, and they started shooting again before they could move away from social distancing. So they have computer controlled cameras that go through the shot. And they just shoot with each character, supposedly. This is the way they're shooting. So they shoot with one character playing against nothing, playing against a tennis ball or whatever. And then they go back through and the camera resets, and then it shoots with the other person, like close to the, you know, be closer than the social distance. So they have to shoot each plate for each character, each actor that's in there. So I'm like, wow, that's extremes, you know, like just like shoot animation or something, you know. I think animation will get a bump out of this, like the baby boom that we'll probably get out of this as well, you know. We'll get a lot of animated shows and a lot of babies out of coronavirus.
Oh man.
So I don't think they're gonna run out. I think they had a nice long roadmap. I know, you know, Disney, you know, Disney has a lot of shows that they've shot as well. So I think there's a lot in the pipeline. I mean, post-production is such a laborious, you know, time consuming, that joke, we'll fix it in post. You know, it just means that post takes a long time.
Oh, I know. As the sound engineer for Trailer Junkies Podcast, I know.
So just add visuals and it complicates it like tenfold.
That's right. So that's right.
I like the idea of, you know, I think if anything, we're going to, all the streaming services are going to be worn thin a little bit, but I think we're going to be back in production sooner rather than later. Even if we get back into production by the last quarter of the calendar year, the first quarter of our fiscal year, I think everybody is going to be back on their feet. And I don't think we're going to feel too much of it. It's hard to say.
Well, like HBO is offering seasons of their shows from like years prior, but nothing current necessarily, right?
Right.
Or very little current.
Right.
So they're saying like, catalog, look at all stuff, of this free stuff, content, yeah, you could get. Yeah. Or backlog or catalog.
Right.
Look at all this content you could get for free on HBO, but we're not going to give you the latest episodes for free.
Right.
Whereas Netflix is like the exact opposite. Like, we have all this stuff we have, and here's all this new stuff you could have, like, right now, you know? And it's like, well, what are you guys going to do in, like, 3 months if you can't get back to it?
But yeah.
So, broken sidewalks aside, have you ever tripped?
Yeah, a couple dozen times. Yeah, I would say.
Really?
So.
Really? Oh, man.
I don't want to
pry any further.
How about you?
Maybe I shouldn't have asked.
No. I think this documentary, you know, because it has.
Is that why you have the shirt on?
Because it has Sting in it, you know, and my wife is a huge Sting fan. So
Sarah
much
Silverman.
So much of a Sting fan that we went to go see The Last Ship. I don't know if you know him, but his he did a off-Broadway show that came to L.A. And when it came to L.A., I heard it on the radio and I was saying, Audrey, I should do this for mommy. So Ann and I got tickets and we got to go see Sting perform The Last Ship with a cast of other off-Broadway actors. But yeah, so for Sting to be in this and to him talk about tripping in this way, it's just like, it is the only, and I, again, like, as I put it into the show, I'm like, do I want to talk about like tripping? And I'm like, yeah, talk about tripping because I don't even know if kids trip anymore. I don't know if anybody does acid anymore, but it was such a thing that it's one of those drugs that I don't think, it's not addictive in the classic sense of way things can be addictive, you know? And I don't know how, and I would love your professional opinion on this because, you know, as a psychologist, it's interesting. And as a child psychologist, even more interesting to me. But everybody that ever like introduced me to acid was always like, you'll reach a limit, you know, you'll hit a certain threshold and then you'll be like over it. Because there are people that like I tripped with that didn't want to trip anymore. And then I still wanted to trip more and whatever. And it was like, they were like, I'm over it. You know what I mean? And eventually you'll be over it too. And I'm like, really? You know? And then there came that moment where I'm like, all right, it's over. You know what I mean? And it was really like this graduation of a conscious realm. And it was amazing. And there are ways that I can bring myself back there without any drugs through meditation and all these things that is very reminiscent of that. So when I meditate, sometimes I can pull elements out of that. So it's really, yeah, huh, I'm wearing a tie. I'm
like
wearing
through memory. Or
yeah. Through just recall and through
experience
like
and
experiential things. But it really is this unifying out of body experience that unless you leave the planet and become an astronaut, you can't really enjoy. So it is a drug and it does do things to you that are dangerous. And, you know, and you don't want loved ones to fall into a bad trip or to put themselves into danger because they are outside of their conscious selves. But there are so many additive benefits to it that in a controlled space and a controlled environments that I think that it should be explored. So, you know, it's like the weirdest kind of thing to me, like of all the things out there, this is the only thing that is both recreational and also experientially positive.
Speaking of experientially positive, I think we should name the.
Oh, please.
Watching
I'm
here.
Sorry. Yeah.
So, no, it's fine, but. Have a Good Trip, : Adventures in Psychedelics.
Yes.
So this is another Netflix documentary.
3 for 3. We did a Netflix trifecta this evening.
The trifecta. Two documentaries and a mockumentary, maybe?
A farce, a space farce.
Yeah, but it's almost like mockumentary-ish.
Yes, exactly, yes.
Yeah. No, I never did acid, but I've done mushrooms. And one of the things, so mushrooms, and you ever hear of a wiki stick?
No, what's that?
Essentially, it's horrible, by the way. I would not recommend it. Okay. It was bad. But you have pretty much a joint, a marijuana joint, dipped in formaldehyde.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Okay, I've heard of that then. Okay.
Yeah, and
I did not know it was called a wiki stick.
Well, that's what we called it, but...
Okay.
And it slows down space and time tremendously, and you are in slow-mo. Like,
is that... But that's like nitrous, though, right? That's just like...
Oh, I have no idea. I don't know.
So, it's so funny, like, wiki sticks and nitrous... They're just like killing brain cells, and you feel the brain cells.
I don't have many left.
You feel the brain cells dying, you know what I mean? And it's kind of like, that's sure, that's one thing. But it is a trippy kind of effect, but LSD and acid, it's the same thing, I guess. But it's a different kind of awakening. So
sure, yeah.
Mushrooms and psilocybins, whatever those are called, they are like the natural versions of the LSD, but
yeah.
I don't know. To me, it's very different. And it's so funny when you hear those people talking about, like, when you hear Sarah Silverman saying, like, I don't feel anything. I was like, ugh, that's me and shrooms every time. Like, I wasted so much money on shrooms, and all my friends had great times on shrooms, and I never felt anything on it.
No, you eat the shrooms, and then what you would do is you would make tea out of, like, the remnants or whatever, and then just sip on it to keep it going the rest of the night or whatever, you know? No, for myself, I mean, obviously alcohol, beer, booze, whatever. I mean, that's very typical.
Right.
Marijuana, typical, I guess. And then probably the craziest would have been like mushrooms.
Yeah.
Or you know, something along that line, right?
Right.
I mean, I didn't really go any deeper than that stuff, but... But yeah, I would say similar to what you've experienced, like you said, more the natural, you know, the organic approach to,
psychedelics.
Tripping and so on. Psychedelics, yeah. And, you know, you have this like awakening of things that like you just your mind thinks of things in different ways or thinks like just outside the box. And when you come out of it, you kind of reflect back on it and you're thinking, huh, that was interesting.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Well, I think so much of our evolution and our society is so focused on the self. Like, you're so focused on, like, what am I doing right now? How am I going to do this better? How am I supposed to be acting right now? How am I being perceived? All these I statements are just, like, so much pressure on the human psyche, and it's done to us from inception, from birth, you know what I mean? And like the focus is on us, and even more so like in our Western culture and society.
Oh, for sure. Very self-centered.
And when you have an experience that is like this and it strips all that away. So it's all about where you do it. Like the first couple of times I was like, I'll just be super controlled. I'll just be, you know, with me and a couple of friends and we'll do it and we'll be very controlled. And that's a very different experience, you know? And like, as you have those experiences and you're like, you expand on it, then you and your friends become closer because you've shared this experience. And then as you like expand that, if you go to a concert and you're like sharing the experience with thousands of people, you know, and a fight breaks out next to you and you can't even like fathom what they're fighting about, you're like... Then you're like trying to rationalize something where you can't even like grasp onto the reality of the situation. So, you know, I just think it's like as you expand the realm of the things that you're dealing with within that space, then you expand your acceptance of everything. And there's a great documentary too on Netflix as well about psychedelics. I think it's in the Vox Explain series where they talk about...
Oh, I've seen that one.
Did you see the one about... And it helps people...
I have seen that one.
...with terminal illness. It helps them come to terms with death. And I was like, wow, this really spoke to me because coming to terms with death, that's the ultimate I statement. Like, I will die one day. But if you...
It helps people with like Parkinson's and all that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But if you can come to the idea that you will die one day and everyone else will die one day, then you don't get so hung up on the idea of dying. And I think, you know, not to say that I love this show called Devs because it has that same kind of, you know, theme and topic, but it does. It really has a psychedelic aspect to it, but it is an AI psychedelic. So anyway, this trailer... This trailer is amazing, and yeah, it has a really cool angle and take, and I think it's interesting to take something seriously that's been thought of as recreational for so long.
Well, and what I wanted to say too is, you know, what you mentioned about the experiences that you feel in the West and Western culture and everything is, I mean, it definitely is a iPhone. It is not a Wii phone. Exactly. So, I mean, when you look at it that way, I mean, it's like it is about us and ourselves and how we portray ourselves. And Instagram is, or Facebook, whatever, are the highlights of our lives.
Right.
You know, and the iPhone is, you know, and I'm kind of emphasizing the I in the iPhone. And I know people aren't Android and stuff, but... I don't mean to talk about Apple in the sense of iPhone. I mean to talk in the royal U of the iPhone.
Yes, the capital iPhone.
The capital I in iPhone, right. That, like, it's all of our phones and... You know, which brings me to one of the things I was watching, but I want to talk about the trailer really quick.
Yeah.
In that one of the biggest complaints I have in lots and lots and lots of trailers, and this one is probably one of the biggest offenders, is they put up an actor, they flash their name literally like 0.23 seconds.
Too fast.
And they jump to something else, and I have to keep hitting the space bar to pause it, you know, because I'm watching on YouTube or whatever. And it's like, who was that again? Go back. You know, and it's like, just slow down a little bit. You know, you don't have, like, I can't read that fast.
Right.
And that last page, so Guy Kawasaki, whatever, you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's like the Apple guru guy, and he does like...
Yes, yeah, he's the original evangelist, yeah.
Yeah, 10, 20, 30 when it comes to presentations. Are you familiar with his presentation algorithm?
Oh, no, I haven't heard that. No, I haven't heard that. Tell me.
Pretty much it's like no more than 10 slides, no more than 20 minutes, right. And no more than 30-point font, right? 10, 20, 30.
Okay.
So that last... page when they show all those names,
yeah,
completely violates the no more than 30-point font. There's just way too much on there, you know, and it's like,
yeah.
So I had to pause, and of course I'm reading everybody on there. I got to see everybody on there, you know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What they want you to do is like, oh, that was a lot of people. There must be some good people on there. I'll ignore it and just keep going. No, I paused it and I read everybody.
Right.
No, that's just a complaint I have across the board. Not this particular trailer, but trailers in general, man. It's like, slow down and let me read the text you put up there. I'm a pretty good reader and I can read really fast.
Right.
But my God, I can't read as fast, especially when you have like convoluted, complicated names.
Right.
Ugh, brutal.
And to me, so in something like this, what there's a couple things that we've always talked about this, like when we're cutting things for my work back in the day. But if they had already talked about that person, maybe they don't put them on this screen.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Leave everybody off that you already mentioned throughout.
And then you talk about who's left.
You talk about, and also these other people, right? So Nick Offerman, you'd leave off. Nick Crowley, the Reggie Watts, you know, Sarah Silverman, Ad Rock, Adam Scott, A$AP Rock. You know, you leave all those people off. You also put, you know, put, and also Anthony Bourdain, you know, and all these other things. But the other thing you could do, and I thought this would be interesting, and I've never seen this done on any trailer anywhere, but this is probably the best case, where you start adding the names. So when every new person comes up, you leave Sting's name up there and you make it smaller, and then you add Sarah Silverman, and her name is big when she's on the screen or when you're introing her.
And it keeps shrinking down.
And it gets smaller, but then you have like a pile of names of the people that you used to have. So then you know to ignore those people when you're looking at this bigger screen at the end, because sometimes there's a legal justification where you have to talk about these people. They all have to have equal billing at one point in time. But then you would have all of them names in the one place, but you know, some of them would be on the screen for a really long time because Sting was on there like at the very beginning, and you'd have his name up the whole time, and many more, you know what I mean? So I think there's interesting ways you could actually get away from something like this. But it is something that I know exactly what you're talking about, and I know that we haven't yet broken the code on this, and we as trailer creators can do something more with this typography.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just my biggest critique about just trailers in general.
Yeah.
And this is Have a Good Trip, Adventures in Psychedelics is a major offender. I mean,
yep.
But at the same time, they're not outside of the norm.
Right.
I mean, it's trailers need to slow down a little bit. And, you know, I get they want to pack as much in as they can.
Right.
But I don't know. Get creative.
Exactly.
Like you said, let it float to the bottom and bring up the next one and then let that float in and, you know, let it like then poof away.
Let them stack or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah.
Do something just different whatever. Than this. A name full of names.
I get the sense you're looking forward to this and will watch it.
I will watch it. Yes, 100%.
Yeah, me too. I'm looking forward to it too. It'll be fun. And I think the thing is, like, one thing I love about documentaries, to include Space Force and such, is the thing I love is it's trainer fodder, right? You get on.
Yes.
I can hear what's going on. It's like a stand-up comedian.
Yes.
I can hear what's going on and stuff. And when I'm suffering, I could just shut my eyes and I could just I can revel in the pain and I can still take in and enjoy what I'm listening to, but I don't have to like see the action.
Right, right. Exactly. That revel in the pain. I'm sorry. It's so funny because yesterday morning on Wednesday or Thursday morning, I was running with Audrey, and you know, we do a run walk where we walk the first little bit and we walk and we stretch out and then we run like sections of it and we walk sections of it. But as we,
this is in the neighborhood, right?
In the neighborhood. So as we start our first run, I like strain my calf.
Ah, oh, jeez.
And I'm like, oh, what's going on? This is like so.
And your calves are like the size of my head.
So I'm like, I strain my calf. Like the last thing I want to do is like put myself in a place where this is going to be a long-term injury. So I got to walk. You know, I got to just like switch to walking. So I walk for a mile and a half or whatever. And she's like running her little sections, but then waiting for me because she wants to walk and talk, you know?
Come on, Dad. Let's go.
So like I pick it up a little bit. I like,
you're so old.
Oh God, that is so,
right?
It's all the time. But then like I have to go biking with Bryce right afterwards. And I'm like, oh God, I don't know if I can bike.
Oh, you're doing like duathlon.
Every day, right?
Right, right.
So then I go biking with him and I was like, oh, okay, this is like working it out a little bit, you know? And I could do it. And it was a lot less strain on the calf muscle, but it was amazing. Like the amount of leg energy it's different, but it is a lot. Like I think I'm more tired from my bicycling than I am from my running. And I don't know why that is.
Well, probably because you're doing it after. So now you're compounding things. It's like double. And then by the time you're done, you're like, oh my God, I ran and rode. Oh, I'm so tired. If you flipped it, it probably would make running more tired.
Okay, all right. Let me try that. If I could get Bryce up at 7.
I know, but he's like a, what, 10 o'clock or noon kind of kid, huh?
Oh, he's still up right now and Audrey's already asleep. It's 11.
Oh, jeez. So what we're watching.
Yes.
What are you watching?
So, well, I should have mentioned this. So every Thursday night now.
Okay.
we seem to be going out of the house. And this Thursday, this I should have been at the top of the show, but I forgot that we...
You went to the drive-in.
We went to the beach.
Oh, the beach. You watched the sunset.
We watched the sunset on the beach.
Nice.
And we saw the bioluminescence. Did you hear about this?
Oh, very cool. Yes, I... right. There's surfers
algae,
who are like...
Yes.
Yeah.
There's algae that's
getting... How was that? Was that amazing?
Up. It's one of those experiences that you have to see for yourself. We took video. We took pictures. Yes, it showed the bioluminescence, like waves breaking and stuff like that. But when you're there and you're experiencing it, I said to a coworker today, I said, Bryce Canyon, the solar eclipse when you're in the path of the solar eclipse.
Yeah.
And this bioluminescence, three things that you can talk about and you can take pictures of, but you can't capture until you're there.
You have to experience it, and anything less than being there, it's like, you know, the old joke, like, you know, had to be there.
Had to be there. Right.
Right.
So that was our Thursday.
That's cool.
Obviously, Becoming we saw on Tuesday, I want to say.
Yeah. Oh, you mentioned that, right.
Yeah, and then we also saw... Anne wanted to see... So the National Theatre, which is the theatre out of London, they're doing YouTube specials where every couple of weeks they're releasing their old performances. And they had Frankenstein. Performed by Johnny Lee Miller and Benedict Cumberbatch.
Okay.
So Benedict Cumberbatch and John Lee Miller, they take turns being the monster and being Dr. Frankenstein.
So what you're saying is when they have YouTube and such, they have recorded prior stage performances that they're releasing on YouTube?
Yeah. So they have like a release and a sunset, like a 2-week window where you could watch a program. So either tonight or tomorrow night, Mark Anthony and Anthony Cleopatra was another stage show that they did. And that's going to be released now for a couple weeks. And it's all
and
for
fun. And this is on YouTube?
It's on YouTube and it's for free.
Do we have a link or something we could put in the show notes? Because that sounds cool. Yeah, I want
to
check it out.
Yeah, we'll put a link to the show notes. And it's Ralph Fiennes as Mark Anthony in this Anthony Cleopatra for the next couple of weeks. But Anne and I watched this on Wednesday night or one of the nights this week. And I was awake for most of it, I said, but she gave me a hard look. So I guess I slept through some of it.
No, you're right there with me, man.
But we started watching it at like 11:30 at night.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, that's way too late to be starting something.
I would have been asleep an hour and a half before that. So I wouldn't even made it to the show.
She's like, put on your mask to watch this. I was like, my glasses don't fit with the mask on. So
they're fogging up.
So we watched that. She watched that. She loved that. We're going to watch Mark Anthony again. And then I think that's about it.
All the major stuff anyway. That's
the major stuff. But yeah, we'll definitely put a link in the show notes to the YouTube, to the National Theater. What about you? What have you been watching?
More Hollywood.
Oh,
so
good.
We're not done yet. So I think we have about 2 episodes left. I think it's like 6-7 episodes.
Yeah,
it's 7 episodes. Right. We're about 5 in. Watched the Jerry Seinfeld 23 Hours to Kill on Netflix.
Oh, nice.
It's like his hour stand-up comedy. I would say typical Jerry Seinfeld. I mean, it's not...
But it's new.
It's new, yeah. It's like literally within the past week or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was funny. I mean, it was typical Jerry Seinfeld. I mean, if you're a fan of Seinfeld type comedy, you're not going to be surprised.
But entertained.
I think he has, it's kind of like having a new approach because now that, I mean, he's 65 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking at him as this older person. He takes a different perspective on, you know, because his whole thing, his whole shtick is like observations
of
the world, right?
Right.
He's
right.
Just observing the world through the eyes of a 65-year-old now.
Right.
I mean, that's really what the difference is. So, I mean, it's entertaining. I wouldn't say it's outrageously humorous, but it's entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, you know what? I'm going to watch some Bill Burr. So I watched some Bill Burr. Man, is that guy a whole arsenal of crass. I mean, he's funny, you know. He's a hilarious dude.
You reminded me, I'm very sorry to interrupt you, but Bill Burr reminded me that on Monday was May the 4th.
Yeah, because of Star Wars and all that stuff.
And on May the 4th, I said to the children we had a rough school day on Monday, and at dinner time, normally we don't watch anything, but with coronavirus, we're like watching TV during dinner. I don't
care.
That's
how we are too. Oh, not during dinner, but we do it like before, yeah. You know, after.
And I said, I'm watching something for May the 4th. And
you didn't watch Mandalorian again.
No, but there's a documentary called, what is it called?
May the 4th?
No, it was a documentary about, it was either Legacy or Legends or something like that. It's basically the making of Mandalorian.
Oh, okay.
So they had the making of Mandalorian, and on Monday, that's the thing that we watched. We watched like the first episode.
Was it good?
And it was really good. It went through all the directors of all the episodes, and it showed all of that, and it's 30 plus minutes, right? And we watch it, and you know, dinner's not over. Dinner's about an hour long. And at the end of the episode, we're like, all right, let's watch the next one. Nope, not there. Next week. Like, it's a weekly, man. You know what I mean?
What is it on? It's on Disney?
Disney Plus.
Okay, I'll have to check it out.
You own that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll have to check it out.
So I'm sorry, I interrupted your Bill Burr. Yes.
No, so I was just saying, so, and maybe that's why I mentioned earlier with the Becoming, where they offered up Bill Burr because I was watching Bill Burr.
Right.
And that might have been part of it too, you know, and obviously, you know, we talked about Ozark and stuff. So we only did one episode of that this week. I mean, it's been kind of a short week. We've been getting the boys to bed a little bit late.
Yeah.
We've been doing a lot more, well, I should say a lot more reading, but we've been just doing a lot of reading and getting the boys to bed late. And then like, by that point, I'm just like, screw it. I'm tired. I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
A lot of our watching is actually early in the morning, not late at night. So, but yeah, pretty much it was Hollywood, Jerry Seinfeld, Bill Burr, and Ozark. I mean, you know, but.
Yeah, here's a funny, not what we were watching, but the process last night. You know, last night was Thursday night. You know, the kids went to bed. We had gone to the beach. We'd come home. And I went to bed, but we didn't want to necessarily go to sleep. So we're like, she's like, you want to watch something? We have a TV in our room. We have a TV in the bedroom. You know what I mean? Like,
got the 49 inch.
We can watch something here. You know, so I put on the TV. I turn it on, and I turn it on to The Bankers, right? Which is on Apple TV. It's about how a couple of African-American bankers kind of put a white front man in front of these people, and they bought a bunch of property and turned a bank to help desegregate these invisible segregation, you know? And as I'm explaining this to Ann, it's like, it's 11 o'clock, it's late. Let's not watch something so heavy. Like, it's just, I don't want to be like so angry.
I don't want to think when I go to right. bed.
So then I turn on Netflix, and I was like, ooh, look, Jerry Seinfeld. Not really into that right now. I'm like, okay. And then I said, ooh, here's Magic for Humans. And I was like, second season, Magic for Humans. I was like, oh, I haven't seen that. And she goes, oh, what's that all about? And it's just, it's Justin William, and he's a street magician, you know, a host for a bunch of other things. And he does magic tricks with a bunch of different people. And Anne had never heard of it. And I was just like, it's just light. You know, you don't have to really pay attention too much. You know, we can do whatever. And as we watched it, it was kind of, it's just a heartwarming, magic, lighthearted kind of show. So we watched a couple of episodes, and it was just like, it's just fun and light. And it was a Christmas episode because it was old season. You know, the new season's coming out in a month. But it was a Christmas episode where these kids were given a magic box where they could get their present, or they could give their present to their mother, or they could get the present that their mother wants, you know, and they have to make this choice, you know, and it was really heartwarming to see these kids like rationalize choosing their mother, a present for their mother. And it hit Anne in all the feels.
And it is Mother's Day this weekend.
And it hit Anne with all the feels, and she was like crying about these kids, like, my mom really wants these shoes, and I'm a kid, so I don't make money, so let me just go with the shoes instead of a present for me, because I get what I want usually at Christmas anyway. You know what I mean? So it was like, was the way these kids were talking about it was amazing, and even, you know, just as a parent for that, it was fun to watch.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. All right, man. Yeah, it's been a good week. I love the trailers this week, and I can't wait to watch all three of them. So I can't say that every week.
I know.
You know, there's some weeks where I'm just like, meh. But no, this week, you know, it goes back to what we always say, though. I mean, like, streaming and Netflix the bar is so low, I don't have to go to the movies. Uh-huh. And I think in the old days when things actually were in the theater, I like how I say that, in the old days.
The theater.
It's one of those things where it's like, oh yeah, you know, and by the time they come to streaming, it's 7 months later and you just completely forgot about it.
The fizzle, it's just fizzled out.
Yeah, but this is like, I mean, Space Force, it's like in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, or 3 weeks, whatever. Like, it's a no-brainer. It's just going to be there.
So, did you hear about Universal? Did you hear about Trolls? So, Trolls World Tour.
How much money they made?
So, Trolls World Tour made tons of money, right?
Oh, incredible.
And did you hear about the new fight between Universal and AMC?
Oh, no, I haven't heard that one.
Okay, so AMC has said...
I heard about how much money they made.
So, basically, the president or somebody from Universal said something about... And obviously, I don't speak for any of these people. But the president of Universal said something about like, oh, we have to look at the windowing. We have to look at, you know, releasing stuff for streaming at the same time we're releasing stuff for theatrical. So then the president of AMC came out and said, those are words of death. And basically, we are boycotting all of Universal stuff. So I think AMC accounts for a third of theatrical spaces. So if there's like 4,000, that's like 12 or 1,500 or something around along those lines of screens that won't show Universal stuff unless they figure this out. And it's just this tone deafness from both sides of the fence where, you know, AMC and Universal are both like, I think they're just speaking a little out of turn about like the reality of the situation. And then I heard on a podcast this morning, there was on one of the Pivot podcasts, which is a technology podcast, they were talking about like how they think theatrical releases are going to be changed at their core because of what we're going through.
Wow.
So I think we could be up for a big paradigm shift on how we do stuff. So,
oh, I see that for sure. I mean,
and they said gyms too, like the gym culture, it's not going to come back to the gym culture of old, you know?
Really quick, I mean, the gym side of it. Bodybuilder weightlifters are going to be gym culture. People on ellipticals are going to just do something else.
Right.
But when you look at like the theaters, though, I mean, you know, my next door neighbors, they are like so tech illiterate. I mean, I've been over there a lot. We can't remember how to get into our old password. Can you help us out? You know, whatever it is, right?
Right.
But one thing they have is a 75-inch LCD or whatever, or, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 75-incher. You make fun
of
me.
Their TV is enormous, and, I mean, they don't know how to balance their sound, and, I mean, the whole thing is just, like, it's not optimized for anything, but, man, is that screen huge.
Right.
And I don't think they necessarily know whether or not it's balanced, and I don't think they even care whether or not it's balanced. So when you think about it in those terms, it's like, I got a big screen. I can watch movies. It's enormous. And I think the 80-incher is coming out next year. And after that's the 90. And I'm going to probably get that one too. You know, and it's like, you know, I'll move the 75 into the bedroom, you know? And, you know, what I'm getting at is like, it's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger for cheaper and cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really, I mean, don't get me wrong. Going to the theater is cool. I like the theater. And, you know, you're sitting there, but in the end, when you have a 100-inch screen and you're 5 feet away, it's almost like the same experience.
Right.
You know, so I don't know what the theaters are going to do when people realize that I don't have to leave the comfort of my home. When I got to pee, I could pause it and I could go get a second helping of popcorn and whatever it is, you know,
for
I mean,
free. Like,
yeah. Or for like
cents
next
on
to
a dollar. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And so, yeah, I mean, I think the theater is going to struggle to some degree because streaming, I mean, I honestly can say that the initial concerns about like VHS tapes, for example, yes. or Beta, yes. whatever, back in the 80s.
Right.
Or, I mean, go way back, right? When the theaters and the movies thought that television was going to be the
yeah.
death knell of the theater. And it never happened.
Right.
And then VHS and Beta came about. And then, of course,
DVDs.
You know, VHS yeah. wins right. in the 80s. And they thought that was the end of it. And it didn't happen. And DVDs and stuff. And that didn't kill it. But man, streaming, though, when it could be released on an instant notice to everybody at a cheap price right now.
And it's not even about the streaming. It's about the windowing. The windowing is the key.
What do you mean by windowing?
So windowing is the release windows of each platform. So like when you thought television was going to kill it, you're like, oh, no. It's going to be in theaters first. And then months later, it's going to be on television.
Oh, I follow you.
So that's a window.
Or years later.
Yeah, or years later. You know, and you'll have to pay so much in licensing fees that we're going to make it years later for cable.
And then there's crazy commercials.
And there's going to be commercials and stuff like that. And then DVD came along or VHS came along. Same thing. What kept theaters alive? Windowing. Like they made a deal with the studios that we're going to have months in advance. And those VHSs are going to cost hundreds of dollars at the beginning. So the rental houses would have to plunk down hundreds of dollars for each tape. And then have to rent it 100 times to make their money back. Because the people people working in the theaters, all their capital costs and all that stuff. So then now we're in this new paradigm where the production company is the streaming service. So there is no value. There is no bonus for them to distribute through a third party. And as everybody comes to that realization, then you have the Universals of the world talking out of turn and saying like, well, we have to investigate this or whatever they said. And it's like,
so what about going to the theater first before streaming to hit an Academy?
Right. And the Academy
nomination.
The Academy doesn't even care anymore. The Academy said, no, we're throwing it out the window. You don't have to.
Oh, they do. They said that.
So this is culmination of events mainly pushed, you know,
wow,
to the front because of the coronavirus. So the coronavirus will kill more than people is definitely the outcome of all of this.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. It's killing summer. It's killing summer camps. You know, it's killing restaurants.
Summer blockbusters.
Summer blockbusters. I loved, my grandmother loved Soup Plantation, and now I heard Soup Plantation will never open again. You know what I said? Sneeze guards were never enough at Soup Plantation. You know what I mean? The scare of like picking up a spoonful of coronavirus at a Soup Plantation like line. I was like,
Vegas is over when you look at buffets.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, think about like, there's a hot craps table. You know, and like you try and squeeze in one more guy and they're like, nope, six feet. two people, you know, three people on a hot craps table. How does that work in Vegas?
Nope, not going to work.
You know, it doesn't work. I mean, well, I think we should pick up this conversation next week.
Yes, sir. Say? Let's do it. We'll still have it.
Yeah, we'll be here again next week. So same time every Thursday we drop. So tell your friends.
All right.
Trailer Junkies Podcast.
Cool.
All right, Ted. We'll talk to you.
See you, Jimmy. Bye.
All right, bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.